Good morning, everyone. This is Saturday, June 25th, 2016, and we welcome you all to our Bible study. And today, Mike from New York is our moderator. Go ahead, Mike.
Thank you. I'm going to start with the reading. It's from, it's a statement by, it was written by Dr. Hammond, a pastor and convert to Christian Science after being healed by Harry Baker Eddy, and it's from Pulpit and Press, page 69. Is Christian Science really as a return to the ideas of primitive Christianity? It would take a small book to explain fully all about it, but I may say that the fundamental idea is that God is mind, and we interpret the scriptures wholly from the spiritual or metaphysical standpoint. We find in this view of the Bible the power fully developed to heal the sick. It is not faith cure, but it is acknowledged of certain Christian and scientific laws, and to work a cure, the practitioner must understand these laws aright. The patient may gain a better understanding than the church has had in the past. All churches have prayed for the cure of disease, but they have not done so in an intelligent manner, understanding and demonstrating the Christ's healing.
Good, thank you.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
Any other comments, or shall I go ahead?
Go ahead.
Okay, and I want to say quickly, thank you all who helped put this Bible study together, those who gave critique and suggestions, also those watching and praying, and the lesson writer who included this most important topic, Promised Comforter. Number one. Where is Jesus and who is he speaking to at this point in time?
To the disciples at the Last Supper.
The Last Supper.
Yeah, I read it was called the Farewell Discourse given to 11 of his disciples. I don't think Judas was there.
Yeah, he waited until Judas left before he went on this speech.
And it was immediately after the conclusion of the Last Supper in Jerusalem, the night before his crucifixion. So it was a very holy, sacred time. A lot of very important things were said, and that's interesting. Yes, he waited for Judas to leave, because of course he knew what was going to happen.
You know, I think we owe a debt of thanks to John as well, who was there with the other 11 disciples. But he gave us a discourse on this Last Supper that's quite extended, quite detailed. We have the benefit of having. The other disciples didn't go into as much as John did. Of course, he was the one that received the revelation, too. Part of it.
Yeah, you know, that's true, because sometimes, there's been this thing of no one's really sure which John received the revelation, but we'll come to this in a few questions beyond, but to me that is somewhat proof that it was this John. He was the beloved disciple and very receptive to the truth, so it would follow to me that he would also receive the revelation.
Yeah,
and it reminds. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say it's interesting. The book of John really is different from the other three books in the New Testament, because it's been said that the book of John is the more metaphysical of the three. The other three are very historical and have a great deal of spiritual understanding in them on the part of the writer. But the book of John is more instructional and metaphysical. It doesn't have as much history, but what it has is really valuable.
Yeah, it has, it's a very...
It's the only book that contains the story of Lazarus being raised from the dead.
Right, very important story. The very Christly interpretation of things. You can see why he was so beloved.
It would seem that he was very similar to Gilbert Carpenter, that he got the spiritual import from it and wrote it down.
That's a good, interesting point. Thank
That's
you.
That's a very good comment because, you know, many people have written biographies of Mary Baker Eddy, but it was Gilbert Carpenter who got into the thought or the spirit behind it all and recorded the spirit instead of just the history, just the outward events. I can remember when we first got the footsteps, started reading through that, we felt like our jaw was dropped, like, wow. But who else gave us something like that other than Gilbert Carpenter? No one.
Right.
It really explains why Mrs. Eddy did certain things. It's very valuable, the Carpenter's work.
You can see why they were so pursued by animal magnetism. If you read Discerning the Rights of Man, what happened to Gilbert Carpenter Jr. and how he foiled all the plots of animal magnetism to prevent those books from being given out. That's a fascinating story.
What's amazing is how logical both are once one has the interpretation and understanding, and I could never arrive at those on my own, so I am very grateful for all those spiritual interpretations.
Absolutely. Anybody else on that?
Okay, then number two, or what is the promised comforter?
Spirit of Truth, the Holy Ghost.
What is Mrs. Eddy's definition of Holy Ghost?
It is divine science.
Divine science.
The development of eternal life, truth, and love.
Couldn't be more clear than that.
It's interesting the different names that people have used to describe this comforter. I mean, Jesus referred to it as the Spirit of Truth, with a capital S. And Mrs. Eddy says somewhere in Science and Health or Prose Works that it is the science of Christianity and divine science.
And I
remember when Albert Einstein read the textbook, he referred to it as the ultimate science. I think that was the term he used.
And it's interesting that he spoke to his disciples because he said the world cannot receive it because it seeth him not, but ye know, for he dwelleth with you.
Thank
you. He knew that his disciples understood.
Thank you. That's true today. There are only some people who can see it, and there are others who seem to be blinded by it, and not only blinded by it, they oppose it. I found it interesting looking this up on the internet. that Islam, they say that Muhammad is this promised comforter.
Really? That's incredible.
Well, it is incredible,
well,
isn't it? But think about it. We have a pretty good idea as to what the promised comforter is, because we've experienced it in our own lives. But it really is something that you have to be prepared for to see it and accept it, isn't it? I mean, how many people just aren't willing or prepared to accept Christian Science? I mean, it's not a, you know, it's not like there are a lot of people who are prepared and willing to accept the science of Christianity. So for someone who isn't prepared, they could think a lot of different things might be the comforter.
What were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say that the comforter, maybe they interpret it as the counselor, helper, intercessor, advocate, strengthener, and standby. So if they have been educated to look at that as what fulfills these, then maybe that's why they would think that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not terribly surprised. I would imagine maybe other religions might think that whatever they're doing is the promised comforter.
It doesn't make it true. I'm just saying that maybe because...
Oh, no, it doesn't.
That's just it.
The what I saw, and I didn't read it, but they were refuting the idea that Muhammad could be the promised comforter, these articles on the internet. But I was talking, my niece was visiting from New Hampshire. She was asking a little bit about our church, but and she has some science background. Anyway, she was impressed that so many people would be here this morning for the Bible study. And she said, too, that the churches in New Hampshire, and Tom has said this, too, and these are the Christian, the beautiful little white Christian churches, that they are quickly losing membership. But you see, the decline of Christianity and the rise of Islam. Gary said that the devil likes to fill the void.
The devil loves a vacuum. And if the Christian churches are not meeting the needs of the congregation, you have a spiritual vacuum. And we shouldn't be surprised that just about anything will come in and try to fill that vacuum. And that's how Islam works. It infiltrates wherever there is a vacuum. And you think of this country, the basis of this country, strong Christian thoughts founded this country. Its laws were based on Christian principles. And where are we now? We don't even have a Christian, you know, in Washington, D.C., in the White House. So that could only happen if there was a great falling away among the population of the United States.
More like indifference of the population.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm.
It is, indifference is the great word for it. And I keep thinking back to that amazing grace, the story of Hosea, and kind of with chills, where he was out trying to wake the people up and saying if they were worshiping false gods. And he said, listen, you've got to wake up. You've got to worship the one God. And their answer was, what are you so excited about? We're fine. Our gods are serving us well, Hosea. Calm down. We have our gods of materia medica, drugs, all these educational systems, the things that family, things that people worship before the one God.
This is the human harmony, right?
Definitely the human harmony, because it will blow up.
So they thought.
So they thought.
Jesus talked about that when he said about the days of Noah, you know, when Cameron's quote, but, you know, people were, you know, eating, living, marrying, whatever, and he didn't talk about it necessarily in a bad way what they were doing. They were just having their life, but sort of what stands out is there's an absence of God in their life.
Absolutely.
And they weren't ready.
Yeah, they may not have thought they were doing something bad, you know, but there's this absence of God.
This reminds me, I don't know if anybody has heard the story of the, you can put a frog in the water and start heating it up, and it will cook to death. And I think in this society, we're just so complacent with everything that's going around, and we're so politically correct, we don't want to offend anybody, so we're going around not really standing up for what we believe, and consequently, we're going to be like frogs. We're going to be cooked to death.
That's true.
That's a good analogy.
Yes, it is.
Because what is politically correct?
Unless you want to eat frogs soon.
Which I guess a few people obviously do. They're drooling over the frog soup. Jeremy?
This is.
There are a lot of different ways of socially accepted suicide, it seems like.
Right. But actually, there is a rising up. People are some of these things that are going on have awakened people from their slumber, and there is a rising up, and it's not over yet, as we will discuss in going forward in Revelation. So that's a great and good thing that people are becoming more and more aware. But I know even this morning where there were some people who were invited to come today, and you know, they had family obligations, which I understand, but, you know, we all
well,
do.
Well, maybe I'll tell you this stuff, but I almost didn't come today because I had made a promise to do something with my son today. Not much, but he wanted to go to the Green Market at Union Square, which is open on Saturday. So then I told him, oh, yeah, I was going to Plainfield for that. Well, he reminded me, I said I was going to the Bible study, you know. So the Green Market is also open on Friday, so when he was coming back from his voice lesson, he got off at Union Square and went to the Green Market and got what he wanted. And then when I saw him last night, he said, you know, I did that so we didn't have to go to the Green Market today.
Thank you. And that's how it works. That's how it works. But and it's very hard. I was just saying to someone before the Bible study, it's very hard for me not to be overzealous about this. Because I see what's going to happen. I see in their people's own lives when they take this conveniently at their own pace. And that's okay if people want to do that. You can do that. That's just fine. But you will reap what you sow, and there will be a day of reckoning. And to put this off and to put this off and to put this off and have so many other things that you need to do, which there's not a person here. I bet there's not one single person here that could have been taken away, and Tom just said, I mean, Betty is out there visiting her first grandbaby, but she put it as a priority, and all of you, I know, and sometimes, especially when you're starting out and you're starting to do it, everything will come in your path to keep you from doing this.
Yep.
It's laughable, yes, it's laughable, because you can, okay, here it comes.
And what's the right attitude to take towards these things when they come at you, these things that try to keep you?
First, you have to recognize them.
Speaking for myself,
But recognize them as a test. In other words, this is not personal.
Like you said on Wednesday, in your testimony on Wednesday, though, oh, it's the Wednesday thing. That happens a lot.
Think of it as a test. You know, you have found the pearl of great price. You have a need, and you are going to God to fill your need. Oops. Somebody wants you to go do something else. Oops. You know, you've got this or that tugging at you to do something else. It's a test.
So I was reading this morning. I'd like to read it. It's the quote from Martin Luther.
In our
Martin Luther King or
Martin Luther.
Martin Luther. Oh, gosh, okay. I say it's Martin Luther King, but it doesn't say King. Okay, this is really good. This from the Love
didn't say King.
Yeah, Martin Luther, I am much afraid that schools will prove to be the great gates of hell unless they diligently labor in explaining the Holy Scriptures, engraving them in the hearts of you.
Thank you.
Martin Luther, Germany.
And this is what we are doing here today.
14th century.
Yeah. So, and I mean, we had company last night. A niece I hadn't seen in her family in a long time. They were spending the night, but we made it clear that, you know, we were leaving at 9 for the Bible study. And they accepted that. You know, they didn't say, oh, no, no, you can't go. You've got to stay and entertain us. Of course not. You just do it kindly and lovingly, and they understand. So that's all we go on.
Yeah, I think if you, you know, like it says, we make a law unto ourselves and we desire to do that as first thing, then somehow I've found, you know, things change in that favor.
Yeah.
That, you know, the putting God first comes about and the others take secondary spot. So
that is beautiful. That is a good use of Mrs. Eddy's statement that we should say daily, that we be a law unto ourselves, that mental malpractice cannot harm us either when asleep or when awake. The good use of that. Thank you.
Excellent. And the other thing that goes right along with that is that whoever is tugging at you to keep you from your rightful place, when you do the right thing, let them know that you're doing something else. You will bless them far more than if you ever gave in to them and succumbed to their wishes instead of what you know is right to do.
Yes.
Because the other principle in this equation is whatever blesses one, blesses all.
Thank you. So you are by no means depriving anybody by your attendance and your dedication to the things of God. You are blessing yourself, them, and ultimately the world.
Definitely appreciate that, and I appreciate you, Mrs. Singletary, of constantly pushing the point. One thing that Mrs. Eddy said was, though, that when things get really more difficult is when error comes at you with nice things. When things are bad, everybody wants to do something about it, but what's happened is that with all these modern luxuries, one might say, and just walk to the store and there's innumerable amounts of food, people don't think anymore. You know, you got TVs and swimming pools and all these luxuries, and so everybody thinks everything is wonderful and ignores the rest. And I think the problem with, like, Muhammad is that somebody charismatic comes along, and that's what people fall for, is charisma. They go chasing after that rather than examining. And I didn't know until I came to Plainfield if my prayer was working, if I was on the wrong track or the right track. And just that understanding of the intuitions that one has is really a message from God. If one's agitated, one has to pray until one is calm and at peace. Those little things, if the whole world doesn't know that, how can they deal with it?
You're right. Thank you. And people pursue, as you were alluding to, where there are no demands made. I mean, I was shocked when I came here and Mrs. Evans started making all these demands. So you got to be kidding me. But in the end, it's what I really loved about her, her toughness. And then I began to see why she was demanding what she was. And it wouldn't happen unless demands were made. You say, oh, do whatever you want. Again, that's the theme of the
devil worship.
Yes.
Satan worship.
Do whatever you want.
And that's sort of what happens in the regular churches, in the Protestant churches I've been to. You know, people do things if they want to, you know, come and go.
Right, and they preach psychology instead of Christianity.
Yeah. Yeah, we've heard that too. But
yeah.
And ultimately, no one can make you do anything you don't want to do. And if you're dragged here and you don't want to be here, you shouldn't be here. That would be dreadful. We wouldn't want you here. It has to be out of love. And that is, I say that very much from the bottom of my heart. We don't want anyone to do anything they don't want to do. But once you start to learn this, and once you start to have healings, you begin to hunger and thirst after it, and it, you make it a priority. And that shows you're really getting it.
But I, it's interesting, the quote from Martin Luther. You know, what do the schools teach us about all of this progress that we've made humanly? You know, people aren't starving anymore. I mean, starvation was common in his day because people didn't know how to raise food or take it to market or keep it from spoiling. Today, there's enough food to go around. That's not a problem. People aren't starving. They're starving spiritually, maybe, but
definitely.
But the human needs are easy for us to meet. But do the schools teach us how that came about? Why it is that mankind has made so much progress?
It's those who want to change us and do us harm. That would be the foreign thought. And that must be checked as impersonally, as thought, not as person.
And actually, South Korea is a good example of the power of the right idea. Not only America, but South Korea. South Korea was, you know, there was very little Christianity in South Korea before the Korean War, and then after the war, a lot of missionaries went to South Korea. And they loved it. They soaked it up. And now I think some, you know, majority of the population in South Korea is now Christian. And that's just in the last 50, 60 years that's happened. And their economy is flourishing. I mean, they are doing incredible things economically. But it's because of the Christianity.
And never fail. You just look around the world and you will see it. A direct correlation. So, okay, shall we move on before we finish the hour?
Yes, number three. What do we know about the author of Revelation?
Yeah, I always assumed that he was John the Beloved, and I don't know if I'm right or not.
Yes, and in chapter 1:9, verse 9, he explains that he was in the Isle of Patmos. He was being sent there, but the Romans were putting him away, so to speak. I happened to have been to Patmos by pure chance, and I was in the small little saloon or sort of chapel-like room, I guess, where John apparently stayed and lived. I was quite young, so I didn't pick up much about it. But I believe he wrote Revelation. I mean, I think he had the revelation there.
Yeah, I read about that.
Very much alone there.
Yeah, I said it was just so hot that he would retreat there, and that's after a particularly warm day, he did get that revelation there. And that he was 92 years old. Prisoner of Rome, remote desert penal colony of Patmos on the Aegean Sea. It was a quarry mined for the Roman Empire, and it was home to many political and religious prisoners or slaves. And the Roman Empire at that time, Domitian, he was probably mad at John because he was evidently put in boiling water and it hadn't killed him. So they were going to put him there to shut him up because he wouldn't stop preaching the gospel of Jesus. He had to survive persecution. He was thrown there with violent prisoners, but he won them over to Christ. And that they couldn't shut him up, and he ended up receiving the revelation. And it was fascinating to me because it goes into many gospels that were not published, that were hidden, and during the Roman Empire, they were being read, but there was an astonishing range of books claimed to be revelations from apostles such as Peter, James, we heard of the one of Mary Magdalene, and but church leaders suppressed them, and they wanted to suppress Revelation too, because no one could understand what it meant. But there was one man particularly who was responsible that it was not kept out of the Bible, thank God. But in studying this, we've come to realize a lot of the books that were suppressed were the more deep ones. They were the deep teachings that maybe Jesus gave to people like Mary Magdalene, whom he was very close to, or perhaps others, the more private teaching, which of course we feel would be more Christian Science, in which he got deeper into it. So, and it also, I also read that this revelation was written not long after 60,000 Roman soldiers had stormed Jerusalem and burned down its great temple and left it in ruins. And you can imagine the people wondered, here Jesus had been resurrected, and they thought wonderful things were going to happen. And then that Jerusalem was burned and left in ruins. I mean, you can only imagine what that meant, how difficult that was. But dear John, he persevered. And even they said at the end, even, you know, into his 90s, he would go around and his teaching was always, little children, love one another. And didn't he say that in his book?
Mm-hmm.
So that was his, I'm sure that that's how he survived it all, because they say he was the only surviving apostle. All the rest have been crucified except for John. And his love and deep understanding of the truth enabled him to survive and then give us something as powerful as the book of Revelation.
And you remember when Peter spoke to Jesus about, Jesus was saying how he would pass on, and he said, well, what about John? And he said, what if he lasts or whatever, till I come, what's that to thee, follow thou me? He was asking what would happen to John. And so Jesus sort of said, well, you know.
None of your business.
Yeah. I thought this was so good, too, in talking about Revelation, you know, why they wanted to suppress it, and how many people who don't are not religious and who don't know anything about God, really, the book of Revelation has inspired such imagination, you know, the four horsemen of the apocalypse. And but anyway, someone has said that an action hero like Jesus, who was in no mood to turn the other cheek. I love that. An action figure like Jesus, who was in no mood to turn the other cheek, and he was not. You got a different picture of Jesus in Revelation. He's on the white horse.
God wins.
God wins, and that's wonderful.
I found the parts from Reverend Kratzer that were provided to be read, I believe, from Tom. Thank you very much. I found it interesting because I always thought, being on a penal colony, that maybe John wrote Revelation in code. So it would take a spiritual person to even start to glean what was in there. And reading what Reverend Kratzer had to say was that, and it does read that way, is that first there were the thunders of him getting the understanding of Revelation to write it down, but then thunder comes to seal it up. So essentially God said to change it so that it isn't in common language, is what Kratzer was saying.
Yeah, that's so interesting, isn't it?
Well, these were letters to the churches, and he had to rely on the Roman soldiers to actually deliver the letters to the churches. If he had written this in common language and said directly what was coming to him, the Roman soldiers would have read this and said, no way. This is why we put you in prison. We're not going to let you do this. So he had to write in a code that would not be understood by the Roman soldiers. so that they would think that there was no harm in actually delivering the letters to the churches. So that is why it requires a very spiritual thought to receive the inspired message that John wrote in Revelation.
And it worked. And there is deep meaning, and yes, this Revelation Interpreted, you can download it, right? And you can also buy the book. And it's Kratzer, and it's the Christian Science Interpretation. Plus, we have Mr. Evans, years ago, taught that class. We have that on CD a long time ago.
From this, the reference material, I got this statement. John the Evangelist declared in the Council of Jerusalem in the year 51 that Christianity should be a universal religion for all, not just for the Jews. Otherwise, Palestine would indeed have remained the cradle of Christianity and its grave.
Wow, thank you. Including the grave. And, you know, when we talk about Christianity, too, we talk about the Judaic principles as well, absolutely, because it all came from that. So.
But the truth is universal. And Jesus knew that. John understood that. Eventually, some of the other disciples finally understood that. But it didn't come right away, most of them. Maybe not to any of them. That this is a universal truth.
And that's what is so inspiring, because you do see people getting it all over the world. A lot of the media makes you think that no one's getting it, and that evil is so large and horrible. And they only report on all the negative things. But this world would not still be spinning around if that were true. And everywhere you meet, you have to admit, I mean, I just meet the kindest, best people just about everywhere I go, from every nation on earth. Truly, I do.
I have found that when you speak, if I speak and in Christian Science, it's a wall go up. But if I speak about the universe, and the laws of the universe, which, of course, are the laws of Christ and God, people listen, and things happen. So I think it's important for us to remember that this universal truth will not be kept quiet.
Thank you.
Exactly. And you speak to people where they are.
Yes.
Exactly.
It's also because of the misconceptions about the name Christian Science.
Yes, absolutely. It's very wise to do as Shardy just said. You know, people bring out sometimes a lot of opposition to themselves that they don't need to do by storming in and telling doctors, well, I'm a Christian Scientist, or telling whoever, I'm a Christian Scientist, I believe this, that, and the next thing. Just zip it. No reason. Why do that? You can tell them you believe in the power of prayer if you want to. You open the door gently. You don't come in with a storm, unless, of course, God directs you, and sometimes it could be that you need to do that. But
depends on who it is.
Yeah, who it is and the situation. But use wisdom. You know, for a long time, our church went by Plainfield Community Church. Partly, we were told we couldn't use the words Christian Science, so we said, okay, we won't. And we used that title, and it was on the front of our church, Plainfield Community Church. But even after we got the right to use the name Christian Science, Mrs. Evans said, well, we'll just leave it off because there's just so much opposition to those words. But now we've got it back on there, and we're blazing it. You use wisdom about telling people that.
But this is why I think our own living it is so helpful. You're living it, it will attract someone, and they will ask you, I've been asked before, what do you read? Yeah.
And then you tell them. Yeah. Once their door is already open, then you tell them. because they see the effect of it. They want to know what it is. And, of course, there are many people now, more so than ever, that have never heard of it. It used to be people have heard of it, but now a lot of people have never heard of it, so they have no preconceived prejudice against it, except they might think it's Scientology.
Mm-hmm.
How are we doing, Mike?
Good. I have one item that I'd like to share on this, and my favorite explanation of Revelation comes from Mrs. Eddy. A little bit of a history thing is that the Science and Health were always originally published in lots of 1,000, and I have a copy of the 1886 19th edition. And in the back it has an index. This was before the concordance was written. And under Eddie, Reverend Mary Baker Glover, it says, compared to the woman in the apocalypse, 511 to 524, see Science and Health. I just thought that was quite interesting.
Okay.
going on to number four, what does the little book represent?
Who hasn't answered?
Science and Health.
Thank you.
Works for me.
I think all of us here would think that it is definitely Science and Health.
Not Mao's little book.
No, it's not the Quran.
No.
Okay, then, shall we move to number five, or anybody else want to?
I don't know if anyone else wants to argue that point. Or.
Well, I think this is instructive in that, you know, the Bible is the history of the spiritual development of, you know, the best thinkers that the world has known, so, you know, up until the end of the Bible. And it's also prophetic. So we're living an experience here that has already been prophesied. It's been talked about. It was expected. So, God told John to expect us, to expect Mrs. Eddy. I think that's fascinating. If there's anybody out there who ever doubted that there's a God, I mean, that should put any doubt to rest. But it should give us all a sense of purpose and a sense of closeness to the God that made us and gave us purpose. Anyway, I find it very comforting and very humbling.
And, you know, in Martha Wilcox's book, she mentions that to see you're put here, you're put in this time, you have a purpose. We have our purpose to fulfill. And I call it the golden thread of the Bible. It's continuing, and we have a purpose. We've been handed it. And all of the Bible and Science and Health is giving us the food we need and the understanding we need to fulfill our purpose. That's very important that we do that.
Which is why Mrs. Eddy said if the medical profession ever gets so powerful that it's difficult for people to practice Christian healing, he said, just make sure everybody gets a copy of this book.
To read the book.
Read the book.
Listen to the book being read. So next we'll go, which goes into the next question.
Just a quick comment on that is I appreciate that being, it may have gone out in the past, which I didn't know, on the forum or Bible study or on the round table, but I really want that to be heard around the world because when I came back from class, I'm so grateful that that's what I learned in class. But when I presented some of those ideas to fellow Christian scientists at church, it was very fascinating because I asked them point blank, is this the correct interpretation? And they didn't even answer me. They didn't say yes or no. They just kind of looked at me. That was a little disconcerting.
Yeah. Some people are afraid to speak up, or they are so misinformed they don't know the truth. And we know what Mrs. Eddy said, that she was a scribe under orders. Someone once, I think, thanked her for writing Science and Health, and she said, oh, my goodness, please don't say that. I didn't write the book. And she says she has had to study it just like everyone else. It was a revelation to her from God. She just wrote it down. That's why it's so precious. And when you read it, instead of saying, you know, using the word man all the time, you can use your name or me, your I. Relate it to yourself. I believe it was Peter B. Ross who said it's your autobiography, Science and Health. It's about you. And it's wonderful.
Okay, then, number five. What is the meaning and instruction of go take the little book, take it and eat it up, and it shall make thy belly bitter, but it shall be in thy mouth sweet as honey?
I guess it means you need to stock up on digestive aids.
And that's what a lot of people do.
And that would be Science and Health. I think it was already kind of brushed upon because...
Well, you know, I think sometimes it just means that, you know, we need to work. I mean, it's not like a birthday party and we have all these presents and open it up and everything else seems so wonderful and have all these nice gifts and everything, and people are paying attention to us, and it's all centered on us. you know, we're meant to work. You know, benefit others, pray for others. You know, bring God into our life. That's what it tells me.
Well, in Science and Health, citations from Science and Health are part of our weekly lesson sermon, which we read first thing every day, isn't it? We start each day by reading from the Bible and from Science and Health. And in our reading it each day, we should be eating it up. We should be taking it to heart.
Digest it. Yes, and then you become it. Just like if you digest food, you become it.
And what does it mean when it's sweet as honey in your mouth?
When you get those quick healings.
Yeah, it makes you feel better. It heals you. It opens your eyes to things you need to know. It helps you see what's real and discern that from what is unreal. It helps you in every aspect of your life. And then what? What does it mean that it shall make thy belly bitter?
Time to grow.
Sometimes you're not willing to overcome sin in your life, the pleasurable part, and that is the problem.
Thank you.
Well, that is one problem, yes.
Pastor refers to the belly as the more the material, sensual. It might appeal to your intellect at first. That sounds good. But then the more sensual things you feel you're having to give up, Mom, no one do that. No, thank you.
I read that it's sweet to the higher elements in human nature, bitter to the lower elements.
That's true. Well, it says about science that it arouses the seven thunders. It helps you come face to face with things like pride and ingratitude, selfishness, things, and it might be a bitter fight until you're willing to let it go And it's a little less bitter when you're willing, saying, you know, this is no part of me and I want to grow. Why science and health is so clear about what man is, the image and likeness of God. And not identify yourself with these lower elements like you talked about. It might be a bitter fight, but there's a great reward if you get into it and do it.
And, you know, maybe some things aren't healed right away. Mrs. Evans used to call it, she said it would be the ring of fire. People would come at first so excited about, oh, this is great, I just love it. And then things would be demanded of them. Or maybe that one thing they wanted to be healed of didn't leave right away. And so they turn away. It's also like the sower and the seed. It becomes bitter. You go, okay, I can't take this. I can't digest it. I don't want to. I don't like it. It's too hard. Yada, yada, yada. And they turn away. I mean, Shardy told me about someone recently who had been a scientist and no longer was, and his reason was.
Well, he said he didn't have the healing, and that he wanted them, and I don't know why. And there's family stuff there that I don't know about. So he left.
Well, and Gary and I were talking about that, and if it hadn't been for Mrs. Evans and her teaching of science, I would have left too. I think I would have. It was a nice intellectual thing, but I wasn't getting healed either.
Because it's bogus.
But, you know, I wonder, can you really leave science if you understood it at all for good?
That's the point. Thank you, Florence. You can't.
I don't think you can either because
no.
I went for years without a church. And I even in the hospital, I read Science and Health because I knew it was the truth. I could never give it up.
Well, I think once you're exposed to it and you read it, there's no way you can, blindfold yourself and go back to some other kind of belief.
If you have the understanding, but if you don't have the understanding, and that's the point, you could leave it. And the bogus science doesn't really give it to you.
That's why I think the example of Kate Buck, I'm so thankful that she wrote that story of her life, that it got to the point where she wanted this healing and it just was not coming.
Yes.
But she read the textbook, and she came to the point where saying, I don't care if I am ever healed.
Yes.
What I'm learning here is so wonderful and so good. Obviously, she was eating it up. Later, she had the healing, but it was because that her love for the truth was on fire.
And that's an article on our website called Slow Healing.
She has one, too, about healing.
And it's what Florence spoke to on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just wanted to say that with regards to understanding science and health, for me, it's sometimes there have been moments where, especially at the beginning when I was studying science years ago, even if I didn't understand it, there was this feeling that it didn't even matter. It was just I knew that there was something that there was something right about this. It was more of a faith, a feeling deep in the heart, and so deep that it's like, wow, this is something special. And so not even understanding it, it didn't matter to me. I just knew it. And you can't even explain it. Sometimes you just know it. And then the understanding comes. But even if it doesn't, yeah, it's just the faith is, it's there. It makes so much, it's just hard to explain, but it's like you just know it, that this is special.
Thank you.
And that's the only way any of us come to it, isn't it? Because it says we walk by faith and not by sight. It's your spiritual sense guiding you. And it's never, your spiritual sense is never wrong.
And that's why, too, that you can't be handed down, because you have to have that feeling. It can't just be given to you. That feeling must be there, that this is it, and I love it, and I could never leave it. But if it's just handed down to you and you never get that point, well.
And I think what you said is really a correct description of understanding. You just got this feeling, and you just know it is. What else are you going to say?
And is there ever a time when you understand everything? I mean, is it possible to understand everything there is to know about God?
No. Well, even Mrs. Eddy admitted that she was still learning from it.
Well, that's just it. And that's why, just because I don't understand everything, I don't have to despair.
Yeah. And there was related to healing, a coroner who did autopsies, and he said when he did some with some Christian Science families where the, let's say, a member died of cancer or something, he said, you guys give up too soon. You were 95% healed, according to what I saw. And
wow.
So that's a comment he made, and he was so impressed that he then became a Christian Scientist himself.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
So it shows that it may not seem to be happening, but if you keep at it, you just don't know when it will happen.
Thank you. That is beautiful. Yeah. That's lovely. Thank
you. And there's a saying about that. It's always darkest just before the dawn.
Yeah.
That's how the devil works. And then, just to finish this up, and then, you know, it's sweet in your mouth, but it requires changes in your life, doesn't it? And when you make those changes, what happens? What happens to your relationships with people around you?
Well, they might not like it.
That's right.
Exactly. There will be some people who will be very uncomfortable with the changes that you make in your life when you have found and begin to practice Christian Science. There will be opposition. Some people who you thought might have been friends will say the worst things, do the worst things. That's part of the bitterness.
Yeah, people turn on you. All kinds of things can happen. And it is. I mean, you look at what happened to Mrs. Eddy, to Jesus, to be considered bitter. But you take it in and keep going. You will find a tremendous blessing and healing, a resurrection. All your false beliefs about life, wrong concepts of life, will go, and you will be resurrected. You will be formed anew.
And if you stick with that, and if you stick with it, it'll be the greatest blessing to all those who initially oppose, if and when they do.
I know it's past 11 now, but I wanted to conclude, and anyone who needs to go, please can. But the Revelation Interpreted, the pages, the suggestive paraphrase, they're very dynamic and apropos for today. And so I'm going to have Gary conclude on them. They said if you need to leave, you can, but it goes on for a couple pages.
Just keep breathing.
Yeah, starting there, just the right time.
Okay. This is John's vision of the full truth. And I rose to another great vision of the Christ, a vision which seemed obscure at first, yet it promised much, and showed an aspect bright as the sun, and seemed founded on truth and love. And the vision, though important, was not lengthy, but the truth thus revealed has power to suppress both latent, hidden error and the visible and audible forms which it has assumed. And I saw that when this higher vision of truth should be given to the world, the full measure of truth would be revealed, and would stir into redoubled activity all of the forces of evil, as it were, in self-defense. And as I was about to write concerning these things in detail, it was revealed to me that this would be unwise at the time, but that I should keep the revelation to myself. And it was revealed to me by the Christ on the authority of the everlasting creative mind that there shall be delay no longer than until the seventh or final vision of truth, the perception of spirit as the only substance shall be given to the world when all the things of God which have been hidden shall be revealed and demonstrated, as has been declared by the prophets of God. And I felt impelled to receive, study, and practice the brief but mighty revelation of truth. And when I had done so, I found that the theoretical understanding of this truth, my first sense of it, was very inspiring and agreeable. But I found that the practice of it involved me in bitter struggles. And it was revealed to me that later I must speak forth the truth in the face of the wide circle of humanity. And this vision gave to me the principle of absolute truth. And I felt impelled to use this principle to make a mental measure or estimate in order that I might understand aright of the spiritual consciousness and of the true method of worship and of those who worship God correctly. And I saw that the mortal consciousness outside the spiritual consciousness cannot be measured by this principle. For this mortal consciousness is given over to those who do not worship God in truth. And they shall treat the spiritual consciousness with contempt during the apparent ascendancy of Satan. And during this period, the Holy Spirit, manifest as truth and love, will be active among men, though they will occupy a humble position in the midst of worldliness. As the bearers of the light of God to men, they may be likened to two candlesticks, perpetually fed by the oil of two olive trees. And if any man tries to hurt truth and love, he has only error with which to do so. And this error they destroy when it comes in conflict with them. And if any man persistently attacks the Holy Spirit with a given error, he is thrown back to have his mortal life destroyed by that same error. Harmony is included within the life of obedience to truth and love. And while these witnesses are held in a subordinate position by men, men are excluded from harmony. And because of this, mankind will be engaged in bloody wars and smitten with plagues as long and as often as men neglect these witnesses. And while they are giving their testimony in a position subordinate to worldliness, enraged evil will use the forces of human government and will seem to suppress them entirely in the realm of human activity. And the churches and institutions which have embodied truth and love in the world will seem to lie dead before the dwellers in sense testimony, whose mental habitation is typified by Sodom and Egypt, in which wicked mental realm the crucifixion of our Lord was conceived and executed. And the dwellers in mortal sense will treat the lifeless human institutions of truth and love with contumely during the apparent ascendancy of Satan. And the wicked will make merry at the apparent suppression of these witnesses and their human embodiments, which had been very troublesome to the wicked. And at the end of Satan's time, the spirit of life from God will enter into the human institutions representing these witnesses, and they will begin to flourish again. And great fear will fall upon those who had supposed them dead. And these witnesses will be called to occupy high places and places of great power, and their enemies, beholding them, will be struck with consternation. Though they will be so clouded or obscured to mortal sense that their enemies cannot understand them. And at the same time, there will be a great upheaval, and a large part of the power of mortal belief will be overthrown. And in the upheaval, the mortal natures of the spiritual conquerors will be destroyed. And those not regenerated will be affrighted and will acknowledge the power of God. The second of the woes has been revealed, and the revelation of the third cometh quickly. And when the human consciousness shall attain unto the perception of spirit as substance, there will be a mighty energizing of truth in the spiritualized human consciousness, declaring, the kingdom of the world is become the kingdom of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign unto the ages of the ages. And all spiritual consciousness will humble itself before God, saying, we give thee thanks, almighty and everlasting God, because through thy power evil is overcome, and thou alone shalt reign. And the nations will be teeming with holy enthusiasm, and the ardor of God's love will be manifest, and the dead will be resurrected and cleansed from evil. And God will give reward to all his servants and will destroy all agencies which render material sense discordant and destructive.
Amen.
Amen.
Thank you.
Wow.
So that's happening, and that's why what's going on, our work, is so highly important. So thank you, Mike, for stepping up and giving us
this. Yes, thank you, Mike.
Yeah, thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Thank you,
everyone. Thank you.
Thanks, Gary.
Thank you all.